Thanks to you, our listeners, KRBN Internet News Talk Radio is growing and is now available on more stations such as Facebook Video, Player.fm, iTunes, Verbal, and now on Amazon Audible. KRBN Internet News Talk Radio currently does not receive any funding to bring you these programs. However, we do ask that you hit that like button and tell your friends to help this station grow. And thank you again for your support.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Bo's Nose Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the Bo's Nose Show. And I'm your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And we're coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, where it's a gorgeous day, although it's supposed to get hot the next couple of days. And even though it rained all weekend, today is the first day of fire season here in West Lane County. So folks, remember, no outdoor burning anymore, no fireworks, et cetera, if you're in what they call wildland areas. And if you want to understand what that is, you can go to the West Lane Fire Protection Association or even ODF and see the maps. Doesn't include Eugene because Eugene's not in the fire protection district, but you kind of know if you look up on your property tax bill and see if you're paying for wildland fire protection in your property taxes. But it is fire season again. Fire danger is low right now, so they still allow you to do things like, you know, run a chainsaw and mow your lawn. But after this weekend's hot weather, I imagine that may change rather quickly because we are pretty far behind in the water here, even though we're ahead for June. But, you know, fire season isn't the main topic of today's discussion. It's whatever you want it to be. All you have to do is give us a call, 646-721-9887, and press 1 so we know you want to get in on the show, because people do call in just to listen. Again, 646-721-9887, and press 1, and that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know that you want to get in on the show and you're not just calling in to listen. We have so much to talk about today. Yesterday was a very interesting board meeting. There were some interesting things that came up about the Holiday Farm fire we'll talk about. Had another update on our COVID emergency, and we actually have gotten to the point where we're not going to have weekly updates anymore, if that tells you something about where we are in Lane County. But there's other stuff going on with COVID, lotteries and everything else, you know, that's always fun to talk about here, as we are the last state in the union to still have mask mandates. The last. California was the second to last. They lifted theirs yesterday. So congratulations, Oregon. We're last again. Woohoo! Oh, gosh. So there's COVID stuff to talk about, fire stuff to talk about, you know, and probably the biggest thing to talk about might be this set of maps that the city of Eugene released showing where they're thinking about having, quote, safe sleep areas around town for the homeless. Because, you know, during COVID, we weren't allowed to make a move anywhere. So now we might be able to make a move someplace. But because of the Ninth Circus Court's decision against the city of Boise that basically says you can't cite somebody for illegal camping unless you have some place for them to go, and it can't be in a religious based institution, it has to be non-religious. So it kind of really handcuffs all the cities and jurisdictions that are in the Ninth Circus's jurisdiction, which is basically Northwestern United States. So we're all stuck with that president right now, unless somebody takes it up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court overrules them. And it's, you know, just kind of what we're stuck with is living under that decision. Maybe as we lift COVID rules, we'll be able to move people around. We have to have some place to put them. So I can kind of understand why the city's looking for some places to put them. But what was fascinating is where they chose to put proposed sites. And if you're in City Council Ward 7, which happens to be one of the poorer city councils because it includes Train Song and Whitaker and Lower River Road and some areas that are, you know, if demographically in the city of Eugene, barely poor areas. And it got 8 of the 11 sites in Ward 7. 0 of the sites are south of 11th Avenue. So nothing in South Eugene. And one site is actually outside the city limits and outside any wards. They put a pin in the map on a piece of property that's diagonally across from the Shell station at Green Hill and Highway 126. And I have no idea what they're thinking, City Council. There's no sidewalks or bike lanes on any of the roads leading up to that. People move in and out of those camps in the dark, particularly in the wintertime. That's already one of the most accident-prone sections of Highway 126. This I know because I sit on the stakeholders committee for the Highway 126 environmental assessment study where they want to improve Highway 126, and that section between Terry and Fisher Lane, a little further past the next major intersection past Green Hill, the most accidents between there and Veneta. The closer you are to Eugene, the more the accidents are. And I don't know if anyone's driven that section once it goes down to two lanes wide just past Terry Street there. And people slow down to maybe turn left into the feed store and stuff, it almost always causes an accident, let alone put a bike or pedestrian on that at night. Holy moly, what a safety hazard that would be. Not to mention, I can't imagine that Shell station is exactly thrilled at the idea of having a homeless encampment really close to where they're supposed to have keep public restrooms clean and actually not have a lot of shoplifting or maybe dumpster fires or who knows what else. I can't imagine that's going to be really good for their business. It's just kind of amazing that site was even picked out at all. And it sort of looks like the city of Eugene's trying to export their homeless population into the county. Which is a little bit bothersome to me somewhat, because I think we talked about this last week, how the enabling type of services, and I count safe sleep sites as an enabling type service, we're not assisting people in any way with these safe sleep sites on addiction treatment, mental health, and other issues of why they became homeless. We're just giving them a way to be homeless easier. So, I talked about how it seems like we've turned into this area that enables homelessness, and with Measure 110 decriminalizing most drug use and drug possession, we're just becoming somewhat of a magnet now for the population that wants to live that high lifestyle. And along with folks that are feeding addictions, you can't pay for drugs with an Oregon Trail card. You can't pay for them with a Medicaid card, but you could certainly pay for them with cash you receive from selling stolen goods. In fact, you can actually get money for an Oregon Trail card too. I know this because I had a friend that struggled with addiction, and one of the things she did was sell her Oregon Trail card every month. At least at that time, and this was probably 15 years ago, you could get $60 for an Oregon Trail card. The cash was more important than food for those folks. When you're in full-blown addiction, that's the most important thing. you know, drawing lines, like it's somebody else's possession. I need to eat. All that stuff falls by the wayside. So if we're not providing some kind of treatment with this safe sleeps, we're really kind of going somewhat in the wrong direction. Robin, I see we've got a caller on hold there with a question mark.
All right, we're going to bring him in live. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jay. So my name's Harry Tang.
Who is this, by the way?
Hi, Jay. My name's Harry Tanger. I called in a few weeks back during my run for the 4J school board. And while that appearance didn't quite, move the needle, but the experience did remind me that those who control the narrative control the direction of our society. And here in the Willamette Valley, we still believe that wearing a face mask is integral to being a good citizen to protect the vulnerable. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you view it, that notion has been proven false. Across the country, sovereign Americans are regaining their rights without killing grandma. Again, unless the narrative reminds in the pandemic, when it meant more control, Oregon was quick to sign a Western States Pact to move in unison with California and Washington, but now those states are reopened and Oregon sits idly by. Sure, when we get to 70%, we'll open, but still under a state of emergency. And if you look at the demographics, only the vulnerable demographics are over that 70%. Under 40 are closer to 50 to 60%, and the rates don't appear to be picking up. Meanwhile, states across the country are hosting major sporting events with zero restrictions. Ah, that's right. The Olympic trials coming to Eugene did prompt an expedited drop to low risk for Lane County. Follow the science, they say. Mm-hmm. More like follow the narrative. So, unfortunately, as you pointed out, the narrative's written south and east of Ward 7 in Eugene. Look, I have a hard time taking on the unhoused conversation because at the end of the day, we are talking about real people and the real challenges that they face in their lives. And there are systemic issues in Eugene, such as a lack of good-paying family wage jobs and soaring real estate costs. Don't get me started on House Bill 2001 as a cause, not a solution to this. But I'm just not sure that concentrating elements of our population into camps is the best solution and strongly question the failure to find sites in more wealthy neighborhoods of Eugene. That doesn't sound very equitable, Jay. I encourage anyone listening to email the city with your experiences and opinions on the street camping issue. But if it goes anything like the recent ward redesign survey, they may ignore your opinion if it doesn't align with their intended outcome. Anyway, thanks so much for highlighting House Bill 2289 that will help families rebuild after last summer's devastating holiday farm fires by cutting some of the bureaucratic red tape, preventing our neighbors from rebuilding their family homes. And thank you also for attempting to broaden the spectrum covered in local media. You're doing important work here.
All right. Thank you, Harry. And I appreciate you calling in. And you do bring up a good point. You know, these are real people that are homeless, but we really want to do something that helps them, not just enables them. And I think we're spending a lot of money on enabling type issues that could be spent on better, more effective, permanent help for these folks. And that's kind of what I'm getting to. And we've kind of developed a sort of economy around it in Lane County. There's a lot of nonprofits that are getting considerable amounts of funds to run these camps and do these kind of enabling services that really don't help these people. It just kind of continues the whole thing. So you kind of wonder, you know, where some of this is going at times. I appreciate also you highlighting that House Bill 2289. It's going to be a very important bill for folks in Lane County. I was really disappointed that I could not get the rest of the board to agree to give policy direction to staff to try and take the most liberal interpretation on making people qualify under that bill and trying to expedite folks to get from, you know, to jump past all the planning hoops and straight into building permit application. But we'll talk more about that a little bit later on the show. It's amazing to me where we are with COVID in this state. And we'll talk a little bit more about that too, because I have to talk about the lottery stuff in more detail. But appreciate your call. Appreciate you running for office. I know sometimes folks aren't successful, but if people don't have any choice, that's even worse. And I really appreciate anyone that starts offering people a choice of candidates for office and is willing to put themselves out there, because it's not the easiest thing. People, you know, try and dig up dirt and say things about you. You got to have a thick skin, and you just, you know, I really appreciate that you ran for the 4J board, and you know, really appreciate you calling in and highlighting some of these things today. Yeah, it amazes me that no sites were identified in the Amazon park area. I mean, there's a lot of flat ground in that area that's open space. There's really good bus service up and down, you know, the Amazon Parkway and that whole corridor. So access to services is pretty good, but nothing was identified down there. Yeah, they're willing to put one really close to North Eugene High School, but Lord forbid they put anything close to South Eugene High School. All right, well, anything else, Harry?
Yeah, I would just add the last 4J school board meeting is tonight for anybody who wants to tune into that and hear about their plans for reopening next year. And yeah, thanks again for highlighting the discrepancy that North Eugene experiences as compared to South Eugene when it comes to school planning as well. So have a great day, Jay, and keep up the great work. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Harry. Thanks for calling in. And just like that, that's how easy it is to have somebody jump into the conversation and, take the direction of the conversation where you want it to go. So, Robin, was that somebody trying to
jump in here for a second, Jay? We got somebody I think's been trying to get through. If they can go ahead and try and stay in line a little bit, I'll be able to talk to them and bring them on if they want to talk.
Sounds good. Yeah. So, while she's doing that, I'll just note that I had to spend most of my day today driving to and from Florence. As I've told folks before, my wife had total knee replacement surgery and can't drive yet. So every time she has a doctor's appointment, and this one just happened to be down at the Peace Harbor campus down there, so which is just about as easy for us to get to from Elmira as it is to get all the way over into Springfield as far as time goes. So I got to drive to the coast and back today. Just is one of those crazy things, that's been keeping me busy while I try and juggle, being a commissioner at the same time. All those crazy demands, and when you're driving, you can't respond to emails, and when you get in certain areas on 126, you can't even make a phone call. So it's really kind of a little bit frustrating at times. I'm saying that partly because I know I'm owe some people some return phone calls out there that have left me messages. I'll get to you. Just been a little crazy. I'm running a day or so behind returning phone calls. So it looks like that person hasn't tried to call back in, Robin. I'm going to keep on this conversation a little bit about the sites across Eugene, because it is an interesting thing. And I kind of taking Eugene to task for not identifying not just sites to have people camp on, because they were constantly pushing Lane County to identify properties that people could camp on, but would never volunteer their own. And at least I can say they're finally doing some of that. But the thing that most upsets me is the one thing I've asked them to do is identify some of their surplus properties that could be used for permanent supportive housing. Robin, is that our caller coming in? Looks like it. Don't jump off. We'll get to you, caller. And that permanent supportive housing is part of what I talk about with permanent solutions for the homeless, where we can actually get people the ability to get treatment, case management. You don't get that in a tent camp. You do get that with permanent supportive housing, and the city of Eugene hasn't offered up any surplus property to us for that purpose. at this time, and we ended up carving off a piece of the fairgrounds, which wasn't a very good decision. Robin, does that caller want to get on? Does Tina want to talk on the air, or is she just calling in to listen?
Tina would like to speak with you.
Well, then let's bring her on. Tina.
It's Tina.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I live in North Eugene, just very near the high school. And we have some real concerns they have selected two sites there, and literally next door to each other. And I don't know how many people are aware, we already have a site at the former VA building where the COVID recovery went in.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's actually a counseling facility.
So we will have possibly three sites with multiple. I mean, when you start talking about things like RVs and cars and tents, we're not talking about 100 or 200 people. We could be going considerably over that with multiple people being able to be in an RV or a car. Or a tent.
Yeah.
And if next to a high school.
Yeah.
And
if it's any experience we're seeing with the Washington Jefferson camping, the businesses around that area have suffered a lot of crime, a lot of vandalism,
yes,
dumpster fires. I can't imagine what it'll be like for businesses in the Riviera Shopping Center.
That has been a discussion taking place amongst neighbors, where we fully expect that if these sites come into play, we expect Grocery Outlet to leave. I mean, I wouldn't stay. They already deal with a tremendous amount of theft. Bi-Mart might be a little better off just because they're more, you know, they're not as independent. They're more of a corporate store. Riviera, yeah, I can't, you know, with all of those small businesses. my husband made the comment last night, can you imagine having two of these sites full of older cars that people are living in and owning the auto parts store in the shopping center? I mean, it also feels like this area of town is really being kind of put upon, for lack of a better, is it because we're just so far north on the edge of town that they think we won't notice?
I don't know. Part of it is a lot of unincorporated area there, so they're really not affecting a lot of city voters. There's a lot of county folks that are going to get impacted by this decision that don't have a vote for a city council person or the mayor.
Right.
You know, and sort of like this site in Greenhill. Yeah, it's surprising to me. The best donuts in all of Blaine County are right there. And I don't want to see cows go away because they get chased off because of crime and everything. So, yeah, I lived in the River Road neighborhood, so I know the area really well.
And like much of Eugene, but we in this area, neighbors talking to neighbors, we have seen in the last 6 months a huge spike just in petty crimes, you know, people stealing bicycles, catalytic converters, cans, you know, stuff that isn't necessarily expensive, but troublesome, certainly. And we've seen a lot more of that.
Yeah. Well, we've always had an issue there because there was always a certain level of homeless camping along the riverfront. When I was living on Sunnyside, there was you'd see transients walking between river and the railroad yards pretty consistently back.
Right.
So that's always been an area that's had a fair amount of transient population. population.
Right.
But now they have these camps up there close to the high school, right up against all those businesses. It is right. going to be impactful in a way that I don't think the city council understands. And I think the city council needs to hear from folks like you, Tina. They're having a work session on the 23rd. So email the mayor.
There was a meeting, yeah. There was an online Zoom meeting, and I missed it because I was busy doing the mom thing. But apparently they weren't being very forthcoming during that session about details. So we'll see. But we're concerned. We're definitely, I mean, honestly, it's crossing our mind that, you know, okay, if they do this, how long do we actually want to stay here? Because, you know, it's not going to be a pleasant
yeah.
place.
Well, I live out in the county now because of some of the, you know, the quality of life issues of being that far in town. I mean, it was great. I loved the house I was in. The soil, you could grow anything in the River Road area. I mm-hmm. swear that, you know, you know, it's wonderful soils, yeah. and I love gardening there. I had a nice 1934 bungalow that we had nice. Rehabbed, and it was just a great place to live, close to restaurants, really close. I mean, I used to work in Springfield, and I would ride my bike to and from work, and 6 out of my 7 mile commute was on the river. It was really
nice.
Hard to get to or get home in a bad mood.
Indeed.
But, you know, eventually the quality of life issues pushed us out to Elmira. So I get it, you know, where people are thinking about that. And it shows in some way. The outlying
yeah.
communities, Lane County, are the fastest growing communities. Junction City and Presswell have much higher percent growth rates than Eugene does. So you kind of wonder why.
I'm just introducing from Junction City, so that's funny.
Yeah.
But
and you may go back someday.
We may. We're considering the coast at this point. It's just, you know, this between the feeling, you know, like we're going to get hundreds of sites in the neighborhood, and knowing that the crime will go up with that. And then, of course, you mentioned earlier, Measure 110 is not helping any of this.
No.
It's an open invitation. So, you know, having that many people who are able to openly use is just...
Yeah, and as the city of Eugene, they're thinking about, you know, putting that kind of car camping sort of ordinance in place where they have to move every 3 days or something.
Right.
Isn't
that a county ordinance anyway?
A county ordinance like that wouldn't apply inside city limits.
Right.
So you can't camp or park on county roadways. You know, we have the ability to, our waymaster actually enforces that illegal parking. But what I'm concerned about is if that's intended to target the industrial areas out in West Eugene where they've been having severe problems with that.
Sure.
Where do those guys go? You know, they're going to start doing, you know, parking in residential areas, hoping that they can kind of sneak by, you know, and not, you know, they're going to start looking to where can we go? We're not going to get moved as often.
Right. And we see it here because we're, you know, we're in a residential area, but we're not very far off Maxwell. So we see it 3 or 4 times a year where an RV will show up and not move for several days. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's happening. Just not,
yeah.
not like it is near West 11th.
Yeah.
But if it's
important, you'll probably see more of it.
I'm
yep.
sure, and I don't, you know, with the decriminalization of the drug use, I don't know how they could possibly limit I mean, short of violence, of course, but, you know, it's you can have two sites full of people who are going to sit around and use drugs, and, you know, that's a possibility. And there won't be any, you know, it's technically not illegal, right? So you
it's
have
a
to pay for that somehow. Right.
Yeah. It's a misdemeanor.
But you still have to pay for the
drugs
somehow.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I was mentioning that earlier in the show. Folks that are in full-blown addiction, all of the various help, none of that, no one pays for drugs. And the only, and drug dealers don't take credit, you know, they don't take, you know, Medicaid or any sort of government
right.
stuff. Yeah. You know, there is no, you know, drug bank
yep.
out there that they can go, you know, like a food bank. They have to get cash somehow or another. And, you know, one of the easiest ways to get cash is what you were talking about. Bicycles, like a can of gasoline that you can, you know, maybe sell to somebody else for cash, you know.
For, right. Small.
You know, yeah. Of course, the catalytic converters are worth quite a bit in cash. That's why they've gotten so popular
right.
to steal. And that gets really expensive to replace for somebody. That's a $1,400
fix. Yes. Yeah. And
yeah.
hopefully the legislature deals with that soon. They're talking about it.
Yeah.
The
bill that would have dealt with it, but I haven't seen it come out yet. And
no.
I think it even had a clause on it. So, yeah.
Well, and you would hope that the businesses themselves would deal with it, right? You know, you would hope that they would just look at it and go, you know, I know where this came from, and no. But they're not going to turn down a profit, so.
Yeah, and part of that, as a business, when you start trying to do stuff like that, the next thing you know, somebody sues you for discrimination. You
sure.
turn down my Catholic converter, you know, because of the way I looked or what you thought of me. So I'm going to take you to court and, you know, take you for $1 million,
course.
You know,
right.
or at least cost you $100,000 in attorney fees. Yeah. So
and
it's like,
right.
I
fighting me.
Yeah. So the businesses without some kind of legislation that says you have to show you're a certified dealer can't ask for that without getting themselves
sure.
tied up in court.
In the legal, right.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully.
Kind of like before, face mask, you know, if you let people not wear the mask, then and you're not asking for proof of vaccination, OSHA is going to come after
right.
you. Yep.
Hopefully the council makes a better, you know, makes the right decision. My understanding was most of these sites were city-owned, but I don't think, in fact, I know, that the site where the church is city-owned. I believe that's private property. That's where the fireworks stand is now.
Yeah.
So that's out. That's money that will have to be spent to purchase that property.
Yeah.
So my question would be, If that property has to be purchased, why are we even talking about it as a site? Because you don't own it yet, City of Eugene. And I had heard that piece of property was under contract already. So I'm beginning to wonder if they have already made the decision to purchase that property
yeah.
and place a site there.
Yeah.
Like... So.
I'm not aware of that myself, but I do know that at least the site on Green Hill and 126, they have a potential 2-year lease or something they can exercise. So it's not necessarily a purchase that they can
right.
get by renting a piece of property for a camp. Which,
for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what the River Avenue property. I mean, I know that it's for sale because you see the signs when you're on Beltline. You can, you know, there's big signs.
Yeah.
So, either way, it's not surplus, right? So.
Yeah.
That's money that's being spent. So. Anyway.
Yeah.
That was my piece for today.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you calling in, Tina. And, that's the whole point of this show is having conversations and hearing from people like you. It's one of the reasons I do this show, so people have the ability to talk to me directly. So thank you for calling in, and thank you for listening. And don't forget to email the city council and the mayor.
We will.
I think if you look on the comments to the post I put up with the two maps on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw my post about that. I think I put the email address for the mayor and council there. It's pretty fine. If you Google City of Eugene mayor and council, you can get to their page, and there's a link for emailing the entire mayor and city council on that page.
Excellent.
So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. So that's
thank you for
a good
listening.
Way to get as well. All right. Well, thank you for calling, Tina.
All right. Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. See it. It's so easy to get in here on the Bo's Nose Show and take the conversation where you want to go and kind of let people feel what you're feeling. And you know, I really feel for Tina and some of the folks there in that North River Road area. They are kind of going to get a concentration of services for a population. Not all of them are lawless. Not all of them commit property crime. Not all of them are addicted to drugs or have mental health issues. But that population has a tendency to have a heavy concentration of people that are addicted to drugs and have mental health issues and do commit crime. That's just a fact, it's not profiling or anything like that. It comes with the disease. You have people that aren't in control of themselves mentally. They will cause problems sometimes because they don't understand the limits of civil society. They will do things that cause them to, not understand when they're crossing the line into criminal act. Folks that are addicted will do things to feed that addiction, like property crime. And when they're high, they'll do stupid things sometimes that rise to the level of crime. That just comes with the diseases. And those diseases are quite often what cause people to become homeless. You don't pay your rent. When you're addicted, you pay for your drugs. You misbehave and put holes in walls and cuss at your landlord or whatever. You end up on the street, with a mental health issue. Those things drive a lot of homelessness. So if you're not dealing with those issues, you're not helping these people in the long term. And just giving them some place to safely camp but still be in full-blown mental health crisis or full-blown addiction isn't really helping them, because they're not dealing with physical health issues, they're not dealing with taking care of themselves, and they're probably going to commit a crime because of those diseases. We really should be taking the funding for things like this and pushing it hard into the more permanent solutions and trying to move the needle long term. We can get some of these people off of the streets and into permanent supportive housing. We have studies that show these folks can cost us $65,000 to $80,000 a year in jail bookings, police response, emergency room visits, ambulance call outs, you name it. All these emergency services, that if we can get them into housing with support, we get that costs us only about $15,000 a year. So even that saves a lot of money for the government to then maybe plow into more permanent housing. But if we're taking that money that we could be spending on permanent housing, we're spending it on enabling folks to continue these behaviors, we're not moving the needle. And we're spending that $65,000 to $80,000 anyway. So we really need to make sure that we are really doing the correct things around homelessness. And you know, that to me is more compassionate, is to help these people in a permanent way. And it doesn't make us a magnet. So that's really, really important to me. And it's one of the reasons, you know, I've fought against people in my own party and conservatives about the whole idea of housing first. And our MLK Commons camp project we put up, because it makes sense, if really on a conservative side too. I would rather spend $15,000 a year treating those folks and eventually hopefully curing some of their issues and moving them into less costly housing, maybe even getting them back to being, you know, tax-paying citizens eventually, than spending $65,000 to $80,000 arresting them, booking them, putting them in jail, you know, for short periods of time, putting them in crisis centers, taking them to ER rooms. You know, that is expensive. And it's a waste of human capital. That's probably the most sad thing about this whole homeless thing. All of those people treated could probably become productive members of society, creative members of society. Quite often, some of the folks that balance on the edge are very creative people. Yet they're, you know, their self-treatment of their mental health issues that might have led them into addiction and all that is making them not realize their full potential as a human being. How much waste is that to our society? How much human capital is going to waste if we're not helping them in a way that's more permanent, instead of enabling them to continue that wasting that human capital? That to me is a conservative value, helping people maximize their ability to produce and be productive citizens and to live happy lives. You know, because I don't think they're truly happy when they're in their addiction phases. At least at most of, you know, ex-addicts, or they tell you they're never not an addict, but the people that are currently in recovery and not using will tell you they weren't really happy when they were using. You know, that they were miserable. They knew what was going on, but they couldn't stop it. So, or didn't have the ability till something changed. Quite often that was maybe getting arrested on a felony and then having that felony held in abeyance while you went to treatment. And if you successfully finished the treatment, the felony went away. Oh, Measure 110 kind of got rid of that tool for us, didn't it? So, but I want to switch gears as I remind folks that we are call-in show, 646-721-9887. And before we lose the whole hour here on the homeless camping issue, I got to talk about the Holiday Farm fire stuff and this House Bill 2289. Now, this is a bill that I know that our, you know, East Lane Commissioner also pushed for. I will give her credit for that. I was pushing for it in a more backroom way than she was, working through the Oregon Property Owners Association, Dave Honeycutt, and some other people. And it was basically a bill that was designed and originally set out, but, you know, in negotiations and everything never starts out the way it was. The idea of the bill was, if you had a house that got burnt down on those Labor Day fires anywhere in Oregon, and you could prove you had that house, you were going to get grandfathered into being able to reconstruct that house, no matter how old it was, whether it was in a floodplain or not. You know, basically the idea was you were grandfathered. We're not going to make you jump through a bunch of hoops to get back to rebuilding your house. Well, didn't quite go all the way to complete grandfathering, but it does pretty good. And basically, you know, you have to prove that your house was there and all that. And there's several ways you can do it. You know, from having assessor's records that was being assessed for having a residential property there to, aerial photographs and other things, copies of the building permit, all sorts of things you can do to prove that. And then if that is there, all the planning issues go away, with the exception of floodplain approvals, only to the extent if the floodplain, issuing the permit in the floodplain would jeopardize a county's ability to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program. And lo and behold, we talked about this a lot on this program. Lane County, passed that floodplain ordinance last fall over my objections. Actually, we passed it, I think, in December eventually, over my objections, because it would impact fire victims. But one of the things I was clear about, and staff acknowledged, almost all of that ordinance, the new requirements that were above and beyond the old requirements, weren't necessary to meet the National Flood Insurance Program. They were above and beyond what was required for base flood insurance program. So we should be able to, basically have all those folks up there not have to do things like compensatory storage that's in that new floodplain ordinance. They shouldn't have to prove that the negative, that they have no other place to build but it within the floodplain, as that new language describes. That's not part of the National Flood Insurance Program. So hopefully, we'll get there. And, describes all these things that counties can accept for that proof. And I just asked the commissioners to give policy direction to our land management staff to take the most liberal interpretation of that bill. To, if somebody came in with an assessor's thing that was good enough, not have them have to come in with an assessor's certificate and aerial photos and a survey or this, that, building permits. No, take the simplest, easiest amount of proof. If somebody was, had lost their home because of the fire, take the, because, a lot of people lost all those documents too. Take the least amount of proof possible under the bill and move people into the program of skipping the line of all those planning things and going straight to building permit. This simple thing, the board could have all agreed, we agree with that. We should direct staff to follow that be as liberal as possible in interpreting that and move as many people to building permit as you can that were fire victims. And we know, we have maps that show which dwellings got destroyed during the fire, GIS-wise, so we actually know it. These people shouldn't have to prove it. So, a simple thing like that, and I could not get, other than Commissioner Farr, I could not get anyone on that progressive side of the board, including Commissioner Buck, who represents that area, to agree to give that kind of direction to staff. They wanted to wait till staff came back with a report in the next update, a month later, before they would even think about giving direction, because they wanted to give staff time to give us a report. Well, I finally kind of got it down to where staff's going to give us a report probably within a week in writing, and then we're going to talk about it in a month. But, they made it sound like, well, this just got signed by the governor. We have time to digest. Well, it got approved by the Senate. It started in the House, got approved by the Senate, and was sent to the governor's desk on May 27th. It just took the governor till Monday to finally sign it. So it's been sitting around for over 2 weeks with the language exactly the way it is, knowing it was going to get signed because the dang thing was approved by more than a two-thirds majority by both houses, which meant it was veto-proof. It went by the Senate at a 27-3 vote. So, the governor wasn't going to not sign this bill. So we knew what the language was for over 2 weeks. It's a short bill. It's 2 pages worth of writing, basically. how hard would it have been for us to give that direction yesterday? Please, staff, take the most liberal interpretation of proof necessary to jump away from the, because you know what I'm hearing? You know, because of COVID and all that stuff, things have been moving slowly through our permit department because people are working remotely and all the problems with that and blah, 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 blah. I hear every excuse in the book why permits aren't moving very fast. And the other thing I'm hearing is we're overloaded with fire permits. So if we could suddenly eliminate half the process for fire victims, wouldn't that free up a lot of staff on the planning side to maybe start processing other people's permits? Because I am hearing from folks that have put in for permits outside of the fire area last year that still haven't been able to get a permit. So why can't we get our board to kind of give that direction? Open up that staff capacity to help the rest of the county. We're in a housing crisis. We have people that, you know, we just finished spending 45 minutes talking about homelessness, and one of the reasons why is also cost. There are people that have lost their housing because they couldn't afford it. And we have people that want to build housing outside of the fire areas that can't get permits. People should be asking Heather Buck, Joe Bernie, and Lori, why? Why wouldn't you provide that direction? What was so difficult about giving that policy direction? Because, you know, yes, staff will work out the details. They are the administrators, but policy is set by the board. And we have failed to really give good policy direction to our permit department, I think, at least in the last several years. And it seems like the permit department, you know, like a lot of administrators, tends to like red tape, and things just don't move as fast as most people would like them to. It is the number one complaint I hear from constituents. Those phone calls I'm not quite keeping up with, almost all of them are about permit issues and how people aren't hearing back, aren't getting their permits, aren't even being told what they're supposed to do, or being told to do something and then finding out later that they did the wrong thing. And then staff kind of, you know, just kind of shrugs their shoulders and sends them back to step one again. A lot of times the person applying for the permit doesn't understand what they're doing and is sometimes misinterpreted what staff said, and there's problems there. But that's, you know, we just need to get staff more available to them so we can iron out some of those issues. And if we provided clear direction yesterday, I think we'd be kicking people, you know, into the building permit side of things that are stuck in the planning side upriver, and opening up planning staff maybe to answer some of those questions more directly for people. Provide them better guidance, not let them misinterpret things. But, you know, people need to maybe ask those progressive commissioners why they couldn't commit to doing that. You know, it was a surprise to me. So that's just one of those things. Well, I'm going to shift gears again and jump back to COVID for a minute, because I got to say this. This insanity with giving things away for people to get vaccinated is starting to get just a little crazy. So I get an email from the governor's office yesterday saying that the governor's office has decided that they're going to make available for counties to put their own money in for prizes on the vaccine lottery within their own counties. You know, so we could, you know, if we wanted to, Lane County could put money into the state to give out prizes for people to entice them to get vaccinated. You know, it's like, oh, great. And then today I get a notice from the state saying, oh, by the way, we've decided to give a $10,000 prize out in each of the 36 counties in addition to the $1 million prize. Well, that's really great if you're a resident of some of the what they call the pioneer counties out there. You know, if I was in Wheeler or Sherman County, where there's only 1,400 and 1,600 people total in the county, you got a pretty damn good chance of winning $10,000 if you go get a vaccine. But if you're in Lane County, where there's 380-some thousand people, maybe not so much about getting that $10,000. That was a really interesting twist today on that whole vaccine award thing. But, you know, it bothers me to some extent that we're trying to bribe people to make a healthcare choice. As I said before on this program, we should just be laying out the disease risk are and what the vaccine effectiveness is and what the vaccine side effect risks are, and let people make a choice and try and make sure we're making it available, holding clinics where the people are, going out in rural areas, getting to workplaces, wherever else. But just let people make their choice. Don't try and bribe them. If anything, that makes people somewhat reluctant, because it's like, why do you got to bribe me? Why you got to give away prizes to get a vaccine? That makes me wonder if the vaccine, you know, it's like, just imagine if any other health decision was being, you know, trying to influence this way. Let's take something really controversial. Let's take the decision whether or not a woman decides to get an abortion. And if one side or the other decided to have a lottery available to folks that made the choice one way or the other, you think that might cause just a little bit of a controversy either way it went? Say a red state that was doing a lottery to encourage people not to get them, and maybe a blue state that was doing a lottery that, you know, was encouraging women to get that, you know, because it is, quote, a health decision, according to some. According to some, it's not, but, you know, that's, I'm not going to jump into that argument that much, but just imagine any other healthcare decision where we ran a lottery trying to influence which direction you made that decision. You know, just, you know, I get back to the state offering counties the ability to put our own money in to kind of, you know, sweeten the pot for our county residents. It's like, I mean, if that comes before our board, I am going to be totally against that. I don't think the state should be running a lottery in the first place, not to mention the fact that because of the way vaccines are done and the federal government issues, you know, veterans their vaccines to the VA system, and that they won't transfer data to the state. Veterans have to notify the state they've been vaccinated to be eligible. So our folks that served our country have to jump through extra hoops, but that one person out of 1,400 out there in Wheeler County might get $10,000 just for showing up. Robin, you want to jump in on this one?
Yeah, just real quick. I think it's really nice of them to be very generous with our tax money.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, you know, what the state's going to tell you is they're using the federal money for this, which, you know, last time I checked, federal money is tax money that's ours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that disconnect between where money comes from sometimes just kills me. Yeah, don't get me started. We were having a whole conversation yesterday about the possibility of having a executive session to talk about bringing a lawsuit to get reimbursed for the cost of the Holiday Farm fire that the county incurred against, you know, whoever the responsible parties were. And I'm thinking, the only people to get rich in that conversation are the lawyers. I mean, and it's the same attorney group, I think, that must have represented the city of Palisades, California, you know, for that fire down there where they sued the power company. Well, the power company settled that and paid them a whole bunch of money. So the city got money. But you know what the power company did? They raised the rates for all the ratepayers to pay for the settlement. So the ratepayers ended up paying for it, which are also the, you know, some of the residents of that city. And the only people that actually ended up with more money after the lawsuit than before the lawsuit were the attorneys on both sides. So it's like, you really want to make the attorneys rich? We're going to sue EWEB and BPA over the Holiday Farm fire so they can raise the rates to all of, you know, the folks here in Lane County. Take the money from one pocket. And in the meantime, a bunch of lawyers are going to skim money out of that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I was not favorable on that idea at all. Well, looks like we're just about out of time here. In fact, I think we ran a little bit over because Robin got me going again. So we'll be back next week with another edition of the Bo's Nose Show, where we'll be coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the folks that called in, and we'll be back next week. Have a great week.